This week, we regale our RV winterization weekend, plus our mini splits, the future of RV air conditioners, and a whole lot more. This is RV Miles. Chances are you've seen them on the road. That's because Blue Ox designs and manufactures the best towing products in the industry. Just look around. You'll find them on highways and campgrounds and anywhere you find people traveling in the great outdoors. From award-winning tow bars and base plates to a full line of weight distribution hitches, adjustable ball mounts, and now they have fifth wheel hitches too. With Blue Ox, towing doesn't have to be a drag. Visit blueox.com for more information. More in a moment, but first, this episode is sponsored by RVMattress.com by Brooklyn Bedding. Get a real mattress for your RV instead of the cheap piece of foam that it came with at RVMattress.com by Brooklyn Bedding. They sell real mattresses in all the odd sizes RVs require, like short kings, Olympic queens, odd bunk sizes, different thicknesses, and more. Their mattresses are toxin-free, made in their factory in Arizona, and shipped to you vacuum-sealed wherever you are. You just unwrap them and let them expand. They have a 120-night sleep trial, free shipping, and a limited lifetime warranty. But the best part is the RV Miles community gets 30% off, the best deal they ever offer. Any day of the year with code RVMiles at RVMattress.com/RVMiles. That's RVMattress.com/RVMiles with code RVMiles at checkout for 30% off. Welcome to episode number 384 of RV Miles. I'm Jason.
And I'm Abby. And we are two RVers who, along with our boys, have been crisscrossing all over North America on one epic road trip since 2016. Here at RV Miles, we talk all things RV and outdoors, from industry news to travel destinations, our national parks, and saying goodbye to the 37 RV miles.
For the winter.
For now.
Quit teasing people like that. We're recording this on Halloween.
So happy Halloween.
Happy belated Halloween when this comes out, but we're getting excited to go, you know, do the things with the kids tonight. We finally carved the pumpkins last night. We went and got pumpkins a few weeks ago at a pumpkin patch. I think more pumpkin patches should have RV camping.
Oh, I agree.
I think that would be really good. Pumpkin patches, apple orchards, that would like be sort of you pick places.
I could have spent so much more time than in the corn maze if I didn't have to.
You found different routes.
If I didn't.
We had not cheated and walked right through the middle of the corn rows.
You call it cheating. I call it efficiency. We had to get out of there. The place was closing. We went on you could go on hay rides, all the things, if you could just camp there. And I have to say, having never been to a pumpkin patch where I'm literally tearing the pumpkin from the vine.
Off the vine, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Those little buggers got a lot of spikes on them. Like with
I didn't know that they had the little sort of...
I didn't either.
Little needly sort of
hairs, almost.
Needly hairs, yes.
Yeah.
Embed into your skin.
Yes.
Almost like when if you ever hold like fiberglass insulation barehanded, is kind of that thing.
I didn't know that they had that. I've never grown pumpkins before. So again, if it was a harvest host, see, now that would be cool.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a campground, but it could be a harvest host's, and you could come and stay for the night.
Absolutely. And I'm sure there are some out there.
I'm sure
like
there are,
that.
Just but not here.
In general, I've always thought that campgrounds attached to something else seems like a really great business model. I talked to a guy, and this is an idea that I've had for years that I finally found a campground owner that's doing. But I talked to a guy who's a listener. Hello, I'm sorry, I forgot your name. At the Hershey RV show, who owns a campground in somewhere in New England. And they have they do a drive-through Christmas lights thing at the campground. And I've always thought, you've got the power at all the sites. Like, you know, if you have, say your campground has five loops, you close down two of them and that's a drive-through Christmas light thing in the winter. And you've got all the electricity run through the park already and everything. That makes a whole lot of sense. But also, yeah, why not an apple orchard or a pumpkin patch or attached to, you know, a canoeing experience on a river, that sort of stuff. a brewery, whatever it is, I feel like there's a lot of room to have more hybrid experiences like that.
Is there a lot of synergy, Jason?
Synergy. Let's
circle back on this at the beginning of the year. Well, case in point, we were talking about this before we started recording. You asked me if I had seen the reel of the Halloween parade at Fort Wilderness. Whoa. Because if for those who don't know, Fort Wilderness, the campground at Walt Disney World, they do every Halloween or right around the weekend before or whatever, they do a Halloween parade. And what it is everyone can participate and decorate their golf cart. And I'm not talking like decorate, like I just put a spooky little ghost on the front.
They turn them into like floats.
Yeah, it's a huge deal. And there are prizes, I believe, for the best, you know, parade float.
I'm sure we have a listener somewhere that participates. We would love to hear more about that.
This is probably the most popular. I think this is more popular at Fort Wilderness than the holiday season. And the holiday season is pretty popular. Yeah. The Christmas season.
The campsites are all, people have the inflatables up. They're all decorated to the nines.
I mean, this is a huge moneymaker weekend for them at this campground. Yeah. Because people come not for the park. They specifically come for this parade. And you could take that model and roll it into another camp. I mean, just think about last couple weekends ago at Scott County. That entire campground was packed that weekend because it was trick-or-treating in the loop for the kids. And so the whole loop got shut down. There was a decorating contest. So the campsite with the best decorations got two free nights at the campground, and people went all out. And this was just the local county park. I mean, so I think people love holidays, and
are part of the camping.
But what I love more about it is that my rig was right there, and yeah, I didn't have it.
Right back to your own bathroom, no porta potties involved.
It also wasn't packed. Like you can only have so many people that are staying there.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so it's not crazy overwhelming. Like, it's getting harder and harder to go to sort of community events anymore because they're packed, which is wonderful. Like that they offer these and people want to come out and enjoy them. But, you know, there have been years where we have gone down to the John Deere Commons for the Christmas tree lighting, and it is beyond outside standing room.
It's insanity. Yeah.
It's insanity. And it's not quite as enjoyable. And so something like this, where maybe you pay a little more, obviously that event is the Christmas tree lighting is a free event, but we paid for camping, but we had a much more enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
Probably a few less people than were at Fort Wilderness, but you know, there's a lot of synergy here is what we're getting at. That's really, we've circled back around. So
All right. We had a couple questions that we wanted to kick the show off with today.
We did. These were some past episodes where some of you have left us some questions, and we want to get into the habit of being able to answer some of these, because sometimes it's harder when you just reply on YouTube and you're not quite sure if the person saw the response. So,
but often when there's a question, like other people also sort of have the same question, and it's just when we see questions kind of often come up too. That always gives us ideas for content, because that's information that people are looking for that they haven't found yet.
So. Yeah. So this question is from 7 days ago. This would have been episode 382. And it was from KimHawk1167. And they want to know, curious about your thoughts on mini splits. Do you think those will become the norm?
So a mini split air conditioner, if you're unaware, also they typically can do some heating as well through a heat pump. But a mini split is a setup where the evaporator and the condenser, two major parts of an air conditioner, are separated. And you might have seen this at, particularly in warmer climates, you'll see this often where a room will have this sort of big white header thing up high on a wall. Kind of looks like a hotel air conditioner, you know, mm-hmm. kind of the low ones that are below the window, but up high, up on a wall usually. They're incredibly efficient. And when we were in the process of building our bus out, that was one of the options that we had thought about, because a lot of bus builders use them, because you can, not only are they efficient, but also you can sort of DIY them. And then now we've seen the new Axiom RV company, where if you haven't seen what Axiom is doing, they're building these massive, massive fifth wheels. I'm sure they'll build smaller ones at some point. But these are, you know, big, expensive luxury fifth wheels, and they've elected to put mini split air conditioners in them. And I've talked to, you know, several RVers over the past that have done the same, have made that sort of upgrade on their own. And generally the idea is that you're getting a more efficient system to be able to use with a big battery and solar setup. And I think it can be pretty effective. Do I think it will become the norm? I don't. And the reason is the new highly efficient variable speed air conditioners that have come out in recent years. And I think this was what prompted this question, is because we were talking about the new one that mm-hmm. Coleman Mach has come out with. And then there's the Furrion Chill Cube. I think we're going to see more of those. And I think those are a little bit easier for install purposes, all that sort of stuff. You know, it's really just drop it in that 14-inch hole on the top of a RV roof, easy replacement, and you're done. The nice thing about the mini splits and what Axiom is doing is that then you've got no unit on the roof at all. Like, you don't need to have, you have to have a place for the outside components, but they don't go on the roof. So you can put them, we've seen people put them in, you know, mount them to the, literally to the bumper on an RV, or in storage bays where they can open up a grill for a fan, stuff like that. There's options out there, but I think that will remain something that is a little bit more boutique, and that we will see more of these variable speed, which is a similar technology. It's just built in one unit. Air conditioners like those from Furrion and Coleman Mach, and potentially we'll eventually see DC air conditioners. And I think that would be a great option. I mean, there are a few on the market out there, but a drop-in DC air conditioner upgrade where you can run it directly off of your battery system, because there's a loss when you run an air conditioner off of an inverter, and pretty much anybody that's using an air conditioner in an RV off of their batteries, which is, that's even a small subset of people right there. You have to run it off of your inverter, and you're losing a certain percentage of power when you do that. DC air conditioners, now that batteries are becoming a lot more powerful, people have bigger battery banks. That's more of an option out there, and they exist, you know, like, I mean, an electric car has a DC air conditioner in it. So
yeah.
I think they're exciting things coming down the road. I don't know that mini splits are it.
All right, then. Next question. This is from winemaker2754. That's a great handle. Love it. Jason, could you do a piece on transmission coolers? Seems some guys say gotta have a bigger one when towing. Others say no. Help. All caps, exclamation point.
This is an area where I'm no expert in, but I'll say with a high amount of confidence that the vast, vast, vast majority of people who are towing an RV have not upgraded or added an additional external transmission cooler.
Can I ask a question here?
Yeah.
Pretend I don't know what you're talking about.
Well,
could you explain? Because there may be some people out there, not me,
yeah,
some people who don't know what a transmission cooler is.
So when you tow,
what would that be?
When you tow and you run your tow vehicle or a motorhome, whatever it is, at higher RPMs mm-hmm. and in lower gears, your transmission heats up. And that's especially if you're going up grades and stuff like that. Sometimes you really want to watch your transmission temperatures and make sure your transmission isn't getting too hot.
Okay.
Because heat is a killer of transmissions. And if your transmission heats up too much on a regular basis, you're going to destroy your transmission. So a transmission cooler is going to route coolant around your transmission to cool it down, just like your engine is cooled with coolant. So it certainly could be an improvement for somebody. If, you know, maybe I would consider it if I was somebody who hauled RVs for a living or something like that. RVs in general, depending on the truck and your setup, but they usually don't come close to the tow capacity of the truck you're towing with, unless you're towing with a kind of undersized truck. But if you've moved up to the heavy duty truck range, if you're, you know, you're above the half ton trucks, you're using a 3/4 ton truck or a 1 ton truck, you're usually not coming close to your tow capacity. You're probably coming close to your payload, but usually not close to your tow capacity. These trucks are usually meant to be able to tow significantly more weight than most RVs. Again, also it's going to be based on your own setup. If I've got one of those Axioms and I don't know what their weights are, but if it's pushing, you know, over 20,000 pounds and I'm traveling constantly all across the country, maybe it's something that I would consider, might consider it on an older truck, something that's out of warranty and the transmission's a little older. So there are certainly options out there, but is it necessary? I have never heard anybody say that. And you're the first person that's ever asked us that.
So this sounds like a truck by truck basis. Lots of things to take into consideration, but for those of us, not me, but others who didn't know what that was, thank you very much for explaining that.
More in a moment, but first, this episode is sponsored by eTrailer. Ever feel like finding the right RV part is like searching for a needle in a haystack? Enter eTrailer.com. Whether you're puzzled about which product is right for you or how to install it, eTrailer has got you covered. Their U.S.-based customer service is available by chat or phone 7 days a week. And with expert Q&As, helpful articles, and tons of reviews and install videos, you'll tackle any RV problem with confidence. eTrailer strives to get their hands on everything they sell, and their website is full of overviews, reviews, buying guides, and tutorials. And it's not just RV parts, it's towing and vehicle accessories, camping supplies, and more. Head to the link in the description and get free shipping on orders over $99. Harvest Host is a membership that allows RVers to take a rest from the road and enjoy unlimited overnight stays at over 5,000 unique locations in North America, like breweries, farms, attractions, wineries, and much more. Easily plan and book your next RV trip and enjoy over $1,500 in exclusive member benefits by joining Harvest Hosts. Get 15% off your first year of membership with the code MILES. That's M-I-L-E-S. Go to harvesthost.com to become a Harvest Host member today. All right. We want to talk a bit today on this episode about our winterization weekend.
We did.
Something different than we've done in the past. We've winterized, you know, many, many times in the past. This is only our third winter as non-full-timers. But even before that, we had to winterize a lot because we'd come and stay with family in December, stuff like that. So this is the first time, though, that we have decided, okay, we're going to have a camping weekend where we go out to a campground and, you know, we spend the Friday and Saturday with the kids and maybe do some little projects and stuff like that. But then Sunday we finish off all the winterization stuff and button everything up in the rig for the weekend.
Yeah.
For the winter.
I wish it was for the weekend. When we were talking about this and like, what is this conversation here? And I was trying to put into words how this year felt different than any other year since we got off the road as full-timers, that we have dumped the pink stuff down a rig. And I just realized it right this minute. The weekend that we did it and the time we set aside that whole Sunday was deliberate. It was planned ahead. And that's why it feels so weird to me, because we never plan anything ahead. We're never that organized.
In the past, I've had to winterize at, you know, at a storage lot, stuff like that. Yeah. And this was great, because not only like, did we get to do everything properly? Not just because winterizing isn't just about putting the pink stuff in lines or blowing them out or whatever you do. there's a whole lot of other things that you can do, like, of course, taking all the food out and right. you know, getting your sheets all pulled out off the beds and cleaned or whatever you
time to wash,
whatever your individual situation is. But there's a lot of different things that you can do if you cover your RV, if you want to spend that weekend doing your wheel bearings, you know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So that you're ready for the spring. We talked about that a couple episodes ago, so that you're not doing all this stuff in the spring and having to spend, you know, a week doing it. Whatever you can do to be ready for the spring, the better. And on top of that, then we also got to sort of make some videos about some of the things that we did, which were not just winterizing.
No, so it was nice. We made a weekend of it. It was our winterizing weekend. I think it's something we'll continue in the future. And what was great about it was, so Friday and Saturday were rainy, cold, just that miserable fall that you get when it's not beautiful. It's not like crisp fall. Oh, let me have some cider and go to an apple farm. And no, it was like, I'm chilled to the bone. It keeps drizzling.
We had
and it
windows was, of good on Saturday, but.
But we were able to kind of snuggle down into the RV a little bit. It kind of forced us to slow down. We'd get these patches where we'd go out and we could have a fire for a little bit. You know, we had his parents out again on Saturday night. But then what was so great is on Sunday, when it was time, you know, for you to do all the stuff outdoors, the sun came out. Yeah, it was a beautiful fall day. It was almost like you regretted that you had to do this, but you were so thankful that the weather cooperated for all the outside stuff.
And we stayed at a county park that we've come to really enjoy that has a 3 o'clock checkout time.
Oh, that is so clutch. It's so great.
That really, of course, when you're doing stuff like this, it makes a difference. It probably would have done more on Saturday.
Yeah.
If we had to check out at 11 or something like that.
It's like this place is made for us.
Yeah.
It's just like, don't leave till 3.
We were still past the checkout time.
But only by I think maybe 20 minutes. So we did a divide and conquer, and this is really typical to even how a travel day goes for us. If you've listened in the past to how our travel days go, then you probably know that Jason tends to handle everything outside. I tend to handle everything inside. And so I'll talk about sort of my winterizing process and how I kind of navigated this, because my main goal was that I did not want to have to come back to the rig once it was in storage. I didn't want to have anything more that needed to be done inside, because I wanted to make sure that we could keep those slides closed and I wasn't going to need to access pantry, or because we have a little bit of limited accessibility to the rig and limited. I'm serious. There's really not much more we can do except get to the bathroom once the slides come in. So my whole thought process with this was that and this is kind of how I work in general when it comes to cleaning or sort of organizing, I really need to compartmentalize. So I started with the front of the rig, which was our bedroom, and I just did that room. And I would clean everything out of that room. I would wipe everything down. I stripped the bed. I packed up all the clothes that were in there. I organized everything. I was really trying to be mindful of how many things are down on the ground, trying to minimize the possibility for any kind of mold because the temperatures are going to fluctuate. So I was really thinking about air circulation for everything in there, wanting to make sure anything that we left wasn't going to potentially have the case for mold, or making sure there were no little food crumbs or anything that might attract a rodent. And so I would just moved that way through the rig. So I just started in the bedroom and then I just moved through to the back. And every time I brought something out from one space, I would organize it, pack it up, take it out to the car or the truck that it was going to go home. And then I would move to the next room. And that for me kept me from forgetting something, because what I also did at the same time was I got the rig ready to travel, because on top of winterizing, we had to move it.
Yeah. If you were doing this in our, you know, driveway,
at your house, it'd be different, right? But so I had to make sure that, you know, the closet doors were locked up, that the bathroom door was locked up, you know, and going into, and then there are certain things you have to remember, like I can't really lock the bathroom door up yet because we're all still here and people are going to use the bathroom. So
right.
There's those little things that you have to remember.
There are things like that when you're combining this with a weekend with family,
mm-hmm.
where it's like you're still cooking. Obviously, the actual winterization of the water lines, one of the very last things we could do because there's still – you know, going to use the sinks and the bathrooms and all that. And so there's eventually a point where we're like, no more toilet use. Yeah. That sort of thing.
You have to go up to the bathhouse now.
But there is, even though we have more time doing it this way, there were some additional challenges based on the fact that we're still using it while we're trying to pack it up to go for the winter.
We also had football challenges. The games were on.
It
was a race day. But it was a race day in Mexico City. So it was like a three. F1. Sorry. I'm referring to F1. Yes. And so it was a 3 o'clock start time for the race. So it was like, look, I have to have all of this done. Like the Bears game was on at noon. So there were so many factors. I don't think I actually started on the inside. You started outside much sooner because you wanted to really get up on the roof and do a bunch of things up there. I didn't really start on the inside until it became very, very clear that the Bears were not winning that game. And then I was like, peace, I'm out.
Yeah.
We're getting out of here. It's time to now focus on the F1 race at 3 o'clock. Bears are going to lose. Yeah. So I guess the question is when you went outside, I had my front to back process. What was your kind of thought process?
So even before, because, you know, what we did was we had camped the weekend before and we camped this weekend and we had paid to leave the rig at this campsite throughout the weekdays, but with me still going over there and doing stuff, and we're not taking up a campsite from anybody. There was just a ton of availability. And they allow that at this campground. But I was able to spend that time kind of during the week prepping for this winterization weekend. I made a couple videos. I made the video on about the pink stuff and mm-hmm. why it's safe. I made the video on sanitizing your water system, which is something that I talk about on this podcast all the time. And a lot of you keep asking for me to do a video on how to do it. So I finally...
Go over to the other channel and watch it.
And sanitizing the water system, of all the things that we did, probably is the thing that took me the longest, because it just takes so long to fill and drain your tank multiple times because you have to flush it out a couple times, right? So that took a long time just to wait for the tank to drain. It just takes forever to drain out through that little nozzle at the bottom, right? So I did that beforehand. I also installed, we got the Sabre 37 RV miles and a lot of newer rigs is prepped for Furion's camera system. So, you know, a lot of rigs are prepped for the backup camera, but ours is prepped for the side cameras as well. So Lippert owns Furion, had sent us this camera system because I wanted to show for potential 37 RV miles or Sabre buyers like that you can add this and how that works and all that. So, we meant to install it before our big 8-week trip earlier this year, and we just didn't get it in time. So I finally was able to put it on so that I was able to test it as we drove back to storage. And part of the reason I wanted to do that is over the course of the winter, one of the jobs that I want to have for myself is to get my dash set up in the truck well done with the Garmin and the monitor for the cameras and everything like we used to have
in
our trimmer. Yes. So I want to get back to having something like that. So I wanted to get that installed so that's ready to go. So I kind of did all that stuff in advance. And then in the outside, it's a similar thing as the inside. The winterization, the actual pink stuff was last, but before that, I started basically with the storage bays. And then I went to the roof and worked down.
So can I tell you a story? I told you this about the storage bays, but yes. I came outside and he's got all the stuff from the storage bays laid out to go through it, organize it. And the day before, we had had one of the storage bays open and I had was sitting outside and I had seen it and I had thought to myself, oh my gosh, that is such a mess in there. And oh, I would really, really love if we could get that organized before we put it away.
Yes.
And he was working on the side cameras and I was just like, you know, that he's got so much going on. I'm not even going to bring it up. I'm not even going to mention it to him. But boy, wouldn't that be something if we had the time to get those organized and we've got a, you know, the last piece of the puzzle, a beautifully organized put away rig. And so when I come out on Sunday and I see that he's pulled everything out and he's organizing it, I just walk up to him and I'm like, I just want you to know that I love you so much right now.
Part of the problem was we were still carrying around 3 fire pits, which is unnecessary.
Yeah, a little bit.
And,
but you never know. You never know. You just don't know. What if you go to a party and they don't, everyone needs a fire pit. You can provide it.
Yeah. And also like what happens for me over the course of the camping season is also, you know, I've got different bins for different things.
Yeah.
And stuff migrates around between them.
Yes, it does.
Stuff ends up not in them. And then it's not just about reorganizing the actual storage bay, but also the individual bins that go into each storage bay. I have one for freshwater stuff. I have one for sewer stuff. I have one for like cleaners and solvents and tools. And
please tell me though that the freshwater and the sewer do not land, because you just said things migrate to different areas.
No, obviously, and I don't.
I need sewage, to hear out of your mouth. The sewage stuff, please,
does not migrate.
Okay.
It stays pretty well in its own bin.
You say that sentence and then you follow it up with, I have a freshwater sewer. And I'm just thinking, oh boy.
No. Then we have a bin for like has a bunch of like soft good type stuff, so it's got like that's what we call it in theater, is any curtains and things are soft goods, but it has hammocks and towels and tablecloth, stuff like that, so we've got different bins for different things, and I was sort of reorganizing them so that they can get back in place and stackable. And we have too many chairs with us, so it's a matter of dealing with those as well. And actually cleaning out the storage bay itself, because
dirty.
So much sand. So much sand.
Why is there sand?
I do not remember.
It has where to be sand. It has from. To be from, oh, it's gotta be from when we were in Alpine down on the reservoir.
Maybe.
It's gotta be that.
Maybe.
I can't think of anywhere else where it was quite muddy-ish, dusty, sandy.
Don't remember.
There.
Anyway.
It's got to be that. That's, we've not taken this thing to the beach. It's got to be that.
So,
or it's just all the stuff we've added in there that all has sand in it.
From the past.
We're still carrying sand around from like Texas.
I dusted off all of our great power setup from ABC Upfitters. Like, you know, I think it's important to keep that kind of equipment fairly clean. So dust that, all that stuff off, clean out the pastures and get that all set for this season. And then I went on the roof and started to kind of work my way down. And the roof was a couple things. What's nice to do all of this at a full hookup campground, so you have access to a water spigot and you have a hose that you can take up to the roof. So, it's important to check your roof seals quarterly anyway. So I went up on the roof, washed the roof off, didn't do like a scrub of the roof. It didn't need it, but I sprayed it down to get any dust and leaves and all that sort of stuff off. And again, it's kind of the thing I had to do on the last day, because leaves would just continue to drop on top of the roof. So I actually did this fairly close to when we hooked up and everything.
Yeah, the gutters were quite dirty.
The gutters are a thing that people forget about often, and they can contribute to leaks because if they are clogged up, then the water is not running down them properly. It's running over the top of them and hitting your windows and stuff like that, and vents at an angle that it's not often getting hit at, and a volume that it's not often getting hit at. So it's nice to have a hose with a sprayer on it to use the jet sprayer, just spray down the entire length of the gutters.
Yeah.
Do that, sprayed all the, any sort of leaves and things that got caught under the solar panels. Somebody had asked me in a comment whether I think you should remove the solar panels to clean under them when you clean your roof. Maybe every 3-4 years or something like that. I don't think it's necessary to go through that whole rigmarole, but you do want to keep your roof pretty clean, right?
Rigmarole is such a great word. I have not heard, I don't think I've ever heard you say that. I'm sorry. I know this is not even at all what you're talking about, but hearing you say rigmarole.
You're welcome. The solar panels themselves were fairly dirty, so they got a good rinse. And you know, then just checking all the seals and making sure there's no sealant missing, no gaps in the sealant, no holes in the sealant. And luckily, I didn't see anything like that, both on top of the roof and then moving down towards the side. So slides. So clean off the roof, clean out the gutters and all that, and then spray off the tops of the slides because all that stuff went on top of the slides, right? So you have to go through that process and checking on the slide seals and make sure all the slide seals are in good condition for buttoning up for the winter and that sort of stuff. And did all that basically on the roof. And then anything that I needed, any minor things that I needed to deal with on the outside on working my way down, honestly, wasn't really anything that I had to worry about maintenance-wise or anything like that, because Sabre took care of all that stuff for me when we had the rig up there in July, so, or in August.
September.
One of those months. September.
September.
So, everything was in great condition. I haven't done the wheel bearings yet. I'll do that next spring. Wheel bearings need to be they need to be repacked on a trailer every year or every 10,000 miles. We haven't put 10,000 miles on it. It hasn't been a year.
Have we come close though?
We're around 8,000.
Yeah.
The truck tells me how much mileage we put on the trailer.
So, this year we put 8,000 miles on the 37 RV miles.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of miles logged, I have to say.
Yeah.
So we'll probably do the reverse, the dewinterizing. We'll probably take it over to this campground and have a welcome back to camping weekend and get in there and kind of get, assess. Hopefully there won't be much of anything to assess. I mean, we're certainly going to be out at the rig. We have not abandoned it until March. We will definitely be out there several times. But
also a store. We have a lot of other things stored in our storage garage.
All the homecoming stuff is still there. One thing we didn't get to do is wash it. I wish we had been able to wash the rig.
Yeah.
Like a nice, good wash.
I mean, I did. I washed it just before homecoming.
But then you drove through
does still have some. Yeah. The outside of the rig, for the most part, is fine. The front cap has bugs on it again.
Yeah.
But I can take care of that at storage.
That's true. So I think that was kind of like the last little bit. But,
you
got up there. Everything looked great. Right as we were kind of at the point where he was ready to start dumping the pink stuff down and we were shutting down bathrooms or any water usage, I took the kids home. So we had the whole family there with us. The boys, once we got to their bedroom and the flex room, they were helping me get that all taken care of, pulling all their sheets off, because I brought everything home, every sheet, every blanket, every towel, Everything came home. I've been doing a wash on everything, getting it nice and packed up into laundry baskets. And then I'm going to take it all back to the rig. I'm going to keep it in the, like, because we have these nice big tall laundry baskets that everything fits in. And then what I do is I just take those two laundry baskets because they fit so nicely side by side in our shower. And I just put everything there into the shower. And then that's where it lives until the next time we're in the rig. And then I will unpack all of that and put it in the places that it lives and belongs. But we got everything that, you know, I made sure that, because I did not want to climb up into their loft. So they were really great. And they got up there and they made sure that there were no candy wrappers that had gotten left up there, because Henry brought down what looked like an entire bag of candy had been consumed up there. Thanks to trick or treating.
I did. So then we did do the actual winterization of the water lines. And, you know, I had a couple challenges with that. One, there was still a ton of water in the tank because my last flush of the sanitization process, I didn't completely empty the tank. So I had to wait for the tank to empty.
And that was even after I had turned on the pump to use water and stuff for washing dishes. And because I saw that it was on empty, but
even
I knew
when you get it to empty, when the pump isn't going to draw anymore, there's still a decent amount of water in there, you know? So there's that. And then this is the first RV we've owned that did not have the past ones we've all owned. You had to like access the water pump and, there'd be like a clear hose off of the water pump that you can put right into the jug of antifreeze. Well, the new Sabres now have a winterization port in the wet bay compartment, right? So where you fill the tank and hook up the water. So it's just you hook up a hose right to it. And it sucks in the antifreeze right there. You just turn it on. A lot of RVs are like that nowadays, but I was not prepared for that because I didn't have a segment of hose that I could do that with. And I didn't have a hose with us that I wanted to cut. Cause I've got rid of our crappy hoses and I just have a couple really nice ones.
Non-crappy hoses.
So what I was able to do was pour all the antifreeze into the bucket that I had with us. Cause I was smart and remembered to bring a bucket this time. Cause it's nice to put the bucket underneath the rig when you run the antifreeze through the low point drains. So you're not just running it onto the ground. Sure. And when you spray it out of the outdoor shower and stuff like that, you can just spray it all into the bucket. Well, so what I did was I filled that bucket with the 3 gallons of antifreeze that I bought. And then I used the coiled hose for the spray port. The rig comes with a spray port that's got a coiled hose and a water sprayer on the end of it. So I was able to take the nozzle off of that, connect that thing to the antifreeze inlet. But that coiled hose then would not go down into the jugs of antifreeze without bouncing back, because it's coiled like a spring. So it bounced towards the top, so it wouldn't get to the bottom. You need the hose to go to the bottom of that jug.
I had no idea any of this was going on.
I was able to like put it in the bucket and then weigh it down to hold the opening at the bottom so that it would suck from the bottom of the bucket of antifreeze and get it through there. And so I was able to get it all done. And then at the last second, I remembered that I hadn't run our cup rinser.
Yes, I remember.
So, you know,
that.
We've got the TikTok sink.
Yes.
As people have grown to love calling it.
I didn't know that's
Sabre 37
called.
RV miles, which has got, you know, it's got the, it's multifunction. It's got a vegetable rinser and it's got a cup rinser where you just like a bar has where you press the cup on it and it rinses your cup out. I had forgot to do just as we were packing up to go. We brought the slides in and everything. It's like, I remembered I had not run through that. And luckily, you know, there's enough pink stuff in the lines to do that. And it's not a big deal, but yeah.
Thankfully, you didn't ruin the TikTok sink.
So we got everything winterized finally just shortly after 3 o'clock and I got hooked up and and got us out of there.
And then we headed over to storage where I proceeded to attempt to damage the 37 RV miles.
Well,
and we'll talk about that in my black tank. Let's
save that for the tanks.
We'll save that for the tank.
So that was our winterization weekend. It was a fun weekend, and it was a nice way to do some chore stuff without it feeling like just work. We were able to still have campfires, have communal time with the kids. It's nice. The kids, like, at home, the kids are always like off in their own spaces and stuff, or under our feet. And at the campsite, it's like we kind of all watch TV together. We do more stuff together.
We go on walks.
We got to go on a hike. We did
everything. Just slows down. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Yeah. Everything slows down, and it was really nice. And I'm already missing the rig, but it's also kind of exciting and wonderful to have something to look forward to, especially after what can be sometimes kind of the chaos of the end of the year. And then January is always very busy for us work-wise. So it'll be nice to know that shortly after that, we'll be back at the campground again. All right, it is time to check the level of our tanks, and that is sponsored by our friends over at Liquefied RV Toilet Treatment, the No BS Toilet Treatment. You can find them over at liquefiedrv.com. All right, Jay, what's in your black tank this week? He's debating whether or not he's going to go where I think he wants to go, or if he's going to take a detour.
No, here's the thing. Let me put it this way.
If you do what I
hate doing this because I feel like
if you do what you think I think you're about to do, and you are like, we don't do that.
This
Abby.
Is similar to that.
There
is a growing segment of social media folks out there who put themselves out as experts in different things. And I hate doing this because, like, I don't want to be like, oh, we're the experts. You're not.
No.
Because that's not the situation. There are many areas that we stay away from on purpose because,
well,
it's not our area of expertise. And sometimes we put
transmission coolers for one of them.
Sometimes we put our foots in our mouths when we say something that's not in our area of expertise. But I think it's clear that it's not.
What do we always say? Know your lane. Know your lane.
But
stay in your lane.
There's a growing... And this is, of course, this is across all elements of social media, but I want to point out to a couple areas in when it comes to RVing. There are people out there that are putting themselves out. First of all, RV technicians. There has been a desperate need for RV technicians out there. And there's been a growing number of people who are going through RV technician training. So there are a lot more, at the same time, there are more RV technicians out there. And what I don't love is seeing some RV technicians who have, you know, just gone through their training.
Yeah.
You know, they've just spent a couple of weeks doing some training at one of the schools, and now they're putting themselves out as experts, and you know they haven't. They're trying to grow business, of course, and social media is one of the ways we do that. But what I don't love is starting to see RV technicians, and there's some great ones doing content out there. It's actually one of the greatest uses of social media I've seen recently. Is that we've seen a lot of great technician content out there, but there's also some bad stuff out there that that frustrates me, because it's just people that have not seen enough in their professional life yet to be giving some of the advice that they happen to be giving. The other area where we're seeing this is trying to give expertise in buying RVs and holding manufacturers accountable for things like warranty work, which is a necessary thing. I mean, it's a huge issue in the industry, and we need advocates out there for that, but there are people portraying themselves as experts in that area. And I worry that they could tend to lead people down the wrong path sometimes.
I think that anytime expert advice comes with, you know, only $99.99 and you can get my expert advice.
Yeah.
Then you get a little nervous. And I think I want to say too, you know, because any expert, so of course, let's acknowledge, look, you put out a news video every week.
Mm-hmm.
And every week you are going through news videos, you are reading stuff, we're getting emails from people, you're talking to people. I still don't think you would ever call yourself an expert.
I don't think anybody should call themselves an expert.
But I think that, well, I think anyone who hasn't, who is given that label would say to you, there is no such thing to an extent because you're never going to know everything about everything. And you should never want to. A good expert, a good person who truly is invested in the topic that they are devoting their life to learning about, will tell you that they will never know it all because you can't possibly know everything. And on top of that, everything is always evolving. Everything is changing. There is no definitive.
Yeah.
There just truly isn't. And
there are things that there, you know, there's and things and videos that I've made recently that I'm like, oh man, I missed that. I needed to cover that. Case in point. I'm sure people could say this about us.
And I'm sure they will.
They have in comments in the past.
But case in point, we had made a correction on last week's podcast episode. You had misspoke.
Yeah.
About where the fire location was for something.
I hadn't written the news video yet. So that Ford fire was not where I said it was. That it was not at Ford at all. It was at an aluminum supplier and it happened a month ago, but reassigning the employees from that plant.
But the important part about that is not that you stand up and go, oh, look at me. I'm correcting myself. I'm so honorable. It's that, you know, that it is important, even when you're embarrassed by it, to make the correction, because it is important that people know that everyone is human. There is no such thing as a 100% expert. I mean, there are people who know a whole lot about something.
Yeah.
But
they're usually just an expert in that thing.
And I think that this falls in line with the supplement and health and wellness industry. Oh. Yes. There are a lot of people out there who tell you that they are experts, or that X, Y, and Z is going to solve all of your problems, or that they have gone and they're taking on, you know, big pharma or whatever it is, and they took them on with this supplement or this food or this, and this. Yeah. And
they've got something to sell. They've always got something to sell.
And then they'll say, and you can too, when you buy this thing for $39.99. Or you can go get my ebook for $15 and I'm going to tell you all about how to do something. Everyone needs to make money.
Yeah, it's not that those things are not. There's nothing wrong with ebooks. It's just
predatory behavior, preying on the fears and the lack of knowledge of others. People in situations where they are nervous about spending a lot of money. Or they're so desperate to feel better. And you prey on that by eliciting fear in them that if they don't do this thing or they don't buy this thing that you're offering them, they're going to make a wrong choice or they're going to die. And that to me is gross. It's just gross. Support the people because you like the message that they're giving. Your money is your money.
My point here is just be careful. Just be careful and vet things. Vet what we say. Vet what other people say. This is hopefully doesn't sound like an old guard, new guard thing. There's just certain, the internet, as we've been bringing up recently a lot lately on this show, because it's something that we struggle with as we figure out the future of our business is, the internet is the guardrails are off on all the social media platforms, and there is so much content out there that is deceptive, wrong, lying, and enraging, and
it's predatory.
It's very difficult to get good information these days.
Well, and it's threatening. It is threatening to eliminate those out there that are trying to create real, genuine content that connects with you on topics, that connects with you on hobbies or interests or entertainment. Or those real and genuine people are having a harder and harder, us included, are having a harder and harder time breaking through all of the noise and reaching people. We've seen just an absolute drop, and we've had lots of conversations with other real content creators who have given their whole lives to this, not just in the RV world, but in other spaces as well, to create a real and true small business. And those people are at threat, just as our small businesses on Main Street are in danger of closing their doors as well by big box corporations. Big box internet is crushing those of us with small businesses right now. And it's really frustrating, because then you see others in your industry creating and doing things, and you see people latching on to that because it's sensational or it's preying on fears, and you are unwilling. You just can't sleep at night if that's the path you go down. But you know that it's potentially hurting your business because you're not choosing that path. But it doesn't hurt your heart, so you sleep easy at night, I guess.
Agreed.
All right. What's in your fresh tank?
My fresh tank is the you know, we're in the middle of this shutdown. There's a lot going on with the shutdown, particularly as it comes to in our field of vision, public lands and national parks. This sort of stuff that we cover related to this. And, you know, and federal employees are not getting paid. And some of them are furloughed, some of them are not. And they, you know, the ones that are not furloughed continue to work. And the ones that are furloughed continue to wait to work. They're sort of in the same situation. They're not getting, they're just not getting paid. And a lot of them live in areas that are very expensive to live in. You live sort of gateway communities to national parks can be very, very expensive. We've talked about this in the past. If you live in, you know, you live in Aspen, or you have to live
if you work in Jackson, you live in Idaho.
You live in Flagstaff. Expensive places to live in near national parks. And, you know, the rangers aren't collecting a paycheck. And what has happened in several shutdowns in the past, and what is happening now that this one is dragging on and on, is that, you know, they're starting to set up food banks and dinners and stuff like that for employees. And I just read an article about that happening at Grand Canyon National Park, where a lot is still going on. You know, there's two campgrounds that have been closed, including Phantom Ranch down in the base of the Grand Canyon is reopening. So we're in the middle of the shutdown, but they're still doing the work to get things working for folks and not getting paid and making decisions, in some cases, whether to drive a long distance to get food, that sort of stuff. And just wanted to shout out to the folks that are out there supporting these people who are going to continue to struggle to get by without a paycheck. You know, their rent's due. It's the end of the month. That kind of stuff is happening right now. So just want to put a little call out too for anybody, RVers who happen to travel to these places often. If you are in one of these areas and you are able to volunteer and help with that sort of stuff, to please consider doing so. So that's my fresh tank. What is in your black tank this week?
My black tank, it's a little bit lighter. Could have been worse. Mm-hmm. A little bit lighter. It felt pretty dang awful at the time. But I almost wrecked the 37 RV miles, putting it into storage over the weekend. So after we did all that lovely winterizing, we took it to the storage unit. And
you know, we have a fancy garage indoor storage.
And unit. it's a very tight fit, especially if we want to try to get any slides out. And we were trying to position it in such a way that we wanted it to be very far driver so that we could ensure that the dining room slide could come out. Because if we can get the dining room slide out, then we have pretty much access to everything that we need. So Jason was backing it in, and it can be a little bit tricky to get started on the back end because we have a whole row of RVs that are have rental space outside in front of us. So Jason often has to come in at an angle, and he's got to spend a little bit of time backing in and then going out, backing in and then going out to try and get as straight as he can because of all of these rigs that are out there. So it looked like everything was fine, and he seemed to be coming in nice and straight. So we were on speaker, and I was in the very back of the rig, so I'm watching the butt of it come in, and I go and I walk to passenger side because I want to take a look at where the wheels are in relationship to the tape that we've laid down on the ground to kind of try and line up. And I'm watching it, and I'm like, okay, looks good. This is looking good. Everything looks great. You're coming in great. And I hear, and I'm like, stop, 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 stop. And I go to the driver's side because at the last minute, the rig fishtailed passenger. So that the front of it, because by this time he's about 2/3 in. So the front cap, we've come up on the tires. The front cap is coming in. The bedroom seat, we're about at the bedroom slide. And it's just crunch, crack, break. And I'm thinking, oh, no, 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 no. We just ripped off the rain spout. Because we have to really watch the rain spouts when we're coming in to make sure that those don't clip. Come around, and the driver's side or the bedroom side is pressed right up against the wall of the garage, the frame of the garage.
It had smashed the keypad that opens and closes the garage.
So the crunching I heard was the destruction.
It was the sacrificial keypad because thankfully that's all that was damaged was that keypad. Everything else was fine.
I'll be honest. I lost it. I started crying. I felt horrible. I was like, I've ruined the rig. You know, I felt like
it was not your fault at all. I was trying to move it over in the space. And it didn't fishtail. I was trying to move it over. We were trying to get over a little bit, and we shouldn't do that in the garage. That needs to happen outside of the garage.
And so he has to take it forward. Obviously, because we can't just leave it there. So he has to drive it forward nice and slow. And of course, I'm hearing, you know, it's going out. And I'm thinking, oh boy, like, because I didn't know at that time that it had been the keypad. So my thought was that it was the frame of the slide had caught on the frame of the garage door. And one of those was ripping off. Like, that's what I thought was happening from what I could see. And then, you know, obviously he got it out there and we saw that the keypad was on the ground. And as far as we can tell, there's not a scratch on the rig.
No, the keypad is... And we were able to use it still to close the garage, but it needs replaced.
It's going to need to be replaced.
I talked to the owner and he was... He's very kind about it and stuff, and he's just going to order a replacement. And not a big deal, but
I was just like, I was such a hot mess. I was so upset because we were so close to being done.
I mean, I should have been watching. I should have been watching. The thing is, one person needs to be watching. Like, you need to be watching my blind side, and I need to be watching my not blind side.
Yeah.
So, and that was my blind side, and we need to just stick to that.
We couldn't. I debated whether or not I was going to tell this story because I'm so embarrassed by it because I should have been watching that side better. I shouldn't have taken it for granted that everything was fine. Like, I was like, we're in the home stretch. You know, I was like, it, you know, I let myself think.
What song is that?
I made it up. It's my home stretch song. It's what I sing when I'm in the home stretch.
Okay.
I'm in the home stretch.
You sure you didn't just make it up now?
No, I sing it in my head.
You sing that all the time?
I sing it in my head. Wow.
That's good information. Wow.
Again, I never should have told you that. Things. Someone else out in the world sings
that. It was no
that.
Big deal. Everything's fine. Just needs a new keypad. We'll pay the storage unit for the keypad and they'll replace it. It's not a big deal. And everything's fine with the rig and we'll continue to be fine.
And then we'll be better about it next time. We really lucked out.
What's in your fresh tank?
So my fresh tank is also a little bit lighter from your fresh tank, but I want to recommend another YouTube channel that I'm obsessed with right now. You may have heard of this pastry chef. Her name is Claire Saffitz. She worked for a long time. She was a freelancer with Bon Appetit. And then I just learned this recently, the things that went south with Bon Appetit in 2020. Whoa. Wow. So she has her own channel. It's called Dessert Person. She has a cookbook out of the same.
Excuse me. It's Dessert Person with Claire Saffitz.
Wow.
Because her name is plastic. And her name is on every single video title.
Yeah, get that.
Her name is all over the place.
I'm waiting until this will say winterizing the RV with Abby Epperson. Like, I'm waiting for that. Okay, so when is that happening? Like, when is my name going to come across?
Yeah, you've gotten into a phase of wanting to turn like a YouTube video on at bedtime.
Mm-hmm. I'm on a particular medication right now that it seems to fade. It can make you drowsy when you first take it, so I have to take it at night. And when I take it, it does make me drowsy, and then that sort of lingers with me and runs out of my system at about 8 o'clock at night. And then I'm like awake.
We go through this every couple of years where Abby decides that we are people that watch TV at bedtime again. And which is fine. Like,
I found something I
used
like.
To always be that person too. But the problem is Abby falls asleep 10 minutes in. And I'm like, well, I have to see this thing to the end. I will hold myself awake.
Claire's,
I do not fall asleep without finishing whatever I'm watching.
I know, I feel so bad. Claire's videos too are some can be up to 45 minutes. And what I really love about them, and it's a goal I have kind of given myself that I've talked about recently, is she just bakes one thing. It's just one thing. Let's say we're going to make cinnamon rolls together. Mm-hmm. Okay. And she is a... I know now it's, what did I call it the other day? It's James Beard Award winning.
Oh, yeah.
Chef.
I can't remember what you
call
said.
It was
something different.
I called it Jeff.
Jeff Beard. Jeff Beard.
I thought it was Jeff Beard. And then you were like, you mean the Jeff Awards and then James Beard. And I was like, yes, that's what I mean. So she's a James Beard Award winning pastry chef. So she will go through, and it's not that she makes it super complicated, unlike you, America's Test Kitchen. I'm looking at you right now. But it's just one recipe. And she just talks about it, talks about what she's doing. And there's nothing fancy about it. There's no big fancy graphics. It's kind of shot rough and ready, you know. But it's one thing for 45 minutes. And it's a challenge I give myself to stick with one thing. Much like this podcast. Did you stick with us for the whole hour? Like, did you make it without wanting to look at your phone? Because, you know, I mean, that's like the goals I have for myself right now.
And it is a nice departure from like scrolling reels and doom scrolling.
Well, I mean, if you go and you watch the days of like watching, I love watching cooking shows on PBS. We've always loved that. Like America's Test Kitchen, you know, Cooks Illustrated. When I was growing up, my parents loved this. His name was Justin something, and he was a Southern Cajun cook. They loved him. So always that, but like Food Network now is like, it's
competition shows. It's
right. Here's the worst ingredients I could possibly give you.
And stuff that you're never going to cook. Like here's this.
But even watching their cooking shows, it's like, I have to show you how to make 3 or 4 or 5 different things in the span of 25 minutes, because you're not going to stick with me through one thing for 25 minutes. So I really like that, you know, some of her videos are 15 minutes because the recipe only took 15 minutes to make. Some of her videos are 45 or 50 minutes because it's a bit more complicated and it takes a little bit more time. And I think that that's, for me, I'm really, really enjoying trying to reconnect with my ability to just hang out with one thing for a period of time.
All right, then.
So
that's it for this week's episode of the RV Miles podcast. That's it.
I look forward to us getting our Jeff Beard Award very soon. And if you stuck with this podcast through the end, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. And if you're enjoying RV Miles, we do hope you'll go over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. Or if you're watching this on YouTube, please consider liking this video, subscribing if you're not a subscriber. All of these actions just help put us in front of all of that noise that's out there right now. You're helping us reach an audience who wants to sit and hang out with two real people who make mistakes every single day of their lives. So thank you so much for being here. And until next week, friends, stay safe. You know what? Go make yourself a quiche and keep logging those RV miles.
Bye, everybody.